Blog Talk Radio.
During Women's History Month, we turn our attention today to Black women and self-care and health issues. After taking care of children, elderly parents, job responsibilities, the church, the community, friends, and a wide assortment of extended family members, there's often not much time left for women of all stripes, especially Black women. We'll explore this important topic with leading expert Billy Avery and a new book on the subject, Health First, A Black Woman's Wellness Guide. Billy Avery is a respected women's advocate and founder of the Black Women's Health Imperative. Then we'll walk back in time and pay tribute to Ellen Craft, who staged one of the most daring and spectacular escapes to freedom in American history. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. I'm so glad you're listening today. It's a wonderful, balmy day here in Boston, and we're going to bottle up and keep this weather because it is wonderful, and it's energy efficient from our housing trying to heat our home. So I hope that you are warm and secure. Hope there's not bad weather your way, hurricanes or tornadoes or the other devastations that we've seen in the last 2 weeks. We're going to pack a lot into today. We want to talk about Women's History Month, both in the present, some of the issues that pertain to Black women and health issues and all the surrounding topics, and then take you back in time and talk about one of my famous sheroes that doesn't get a lot of attention. When you talk about Harriet Tubman and Sojourner Truth and other Black women who were just valiant during the struggles of slavery, abolition and Civil War and the post-Civil War era, you don't hear that much about Ellen Craft. But I want to just share with you how dynamic she was, what she and her husband did to escape slavery, and how they did it way back in 1848. If you'd like more information about membership in the Multicultural Symposium Series, we are ramping up for a very exciting year. You can become a member and participate with our webinar series that will start at the end of March. Go to mssconnect.com. That's www.mssconnect.com. And you can find out more about becoming a member of the Multicultural Symposium Series. We have lots of things that are going to be going on. Our conference will take place at the end of the year in October. We have a 2013 Caribbean cruise that we're launching later on this month, and we'll tell you more information, give you more information about that in times to come. Our webinar series, as I mentioned, will take place, will start kickoff at the end of this month, and we'll have them monthly. And just a whole range of other ways where you can really bring multiculturalism into your space, whether it's into your workplace, whether it's into your home or your community, ways that you can really integrate diversity and multiculturalism into your life. And my book is coming out very soon, so we'll tell you more about that in the coming days. Lots of great things. So you can go, again, to www.mssconnect.com or to my website, www.tellcarole.com. That's TellCarole.com, and find out more about my speaking and training activities and ways that you can bring me to your organization. Well, I'm delighted today to have a real pioneer. You know, we talk about pioneers certainly back to 1848, but in our lifetime, we have pioneers who had visions and acted on them. It's one thing to have a vision. You know, you can have a dream or an idea or a suggestion. It's another thing to write it down. It's another thing to act on it by starting either an organization, an initiative, an endeavor, and in many ways bootstrap finance it yourself, which happens an awful lot, particularly in communities of color or working with women. But then to have it sustained throughout the years. And again, I look at this valiant pioneer who started the Black Women's Health Imperative about 30 plus years ago, and it is going strong. She is now continues to be that pioneer founder of the organization, and the organization is now responsible for a book called Health First, the Black Woman's Wellness Guide. We have Billy Avery on the line coming from the Cape, I believe. Billy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
We'll give you a big plug because you also have, I believe, a monthly radio program on Blog Talk Radio. So give a shout-out about the show that you held yesterday.
Yes, our show is called First Wednesdays, Conversations with Billy and Angina. And it's wonderful. The one we did yesterday was on older Black women and HIV, which some people think is counterintuitive because they think older Black women don't need, want, or should be having sex. But we are very sexually active, and many of us have HIV for various reasons. And if people want to hear that show, they can go to blackwomenshealth.org and click on Imperative Radio, and all our shows are archived there. But thank you.
That's great. And great shout-out and one worth listening to. Thank you so much. Tell us about the circumstances that allowed you to take an idea from idea stage to actually implementation 30-plus years ago when you started the Black Women's Health Imperative.
Right. Well, I started the organization in the early 80s. But to tell you the truth, if I go back to what motivated me before that, it was the death of my husband in 1970. He had a massive heart attack at 33 and died. And it was such a shock and such a surprise. And he was about 4 months away from getting his doctorate, and we were ready to go off and go live the American dream. We already had the two kids, and we were, you know, thought we were ready, set for life, and for him to be taken away so early. And you know, those years made me start to think about health, and what we learned is that he was hypertensive and we didn't know it.
Wow.
And this was before the campaign for high blood pressure as the silent killer. And he had been told his pressure was a little high. But, you know, some sort of way if somebody tells you that, you don't think it's serious enough to cause a heart attack and you die, you know. And so we were really very unaware. And I realized it doesn't matter how much education you have. If you don't know how to take care of yourself, you're basically ignorant. So my whole thing was, how do we start to educate ourselves about our health issues? And how do we give information to people so that it makes sense to them, motivates them, informs them, so that we can start to take care of ourselves in a much different way?
How did you shift from that tragedy, which clearly altered your life and probably spun you in a different direction, to then 10-plus years later focusing specifically on women and their health issues? I'm just curious.
Yeah, good question. You will remember the late 70s and all. The 70s were the time of a lot of the birth of the second wave of feminism. And one of the books that my husband read before he died was The Feminine Mystique. And he kept telling me, Billy, you should read this book. Billy, you should read this book. And I didn't read it because I was mad at him because he wasn't helping me with the children. He was reading while I was cooking and all, you know, all the things we do. And so a couple of years after he died, I said, let me read this book. Or maybe it was a year or so. And I was like, oh, my God. And this was the beginning of the second wave of feminism, reproductive rights. There was all of the work around women gaining access to safe, legal abortions. And I'm noticing the Black women who are dying from self-induced abortions. And I got all involved in women's health. And in 74, I, along with a group of women, opened up the Gainesville Women's Health Center, which was a first trimester abortion and well woman GYN clinic in Gainesville. And most of the work we did was, the GYN clinic, but the attention came from the other. And then I learned how many Black women were, Black families, not just the women, were needing our services.
Was this in Gainesville, Florida?
Yeah, this was in Gainesville, Florida.
Yes.
And 4 years after that, we opened up Birthplace, which is a birthing center, a freestanding birthing center, where women came to have their babies with natural childbirth. And so as I started to do all this work, I noticed that we black women were not showing up for any of the preventive care. We mm-hmm. were only showing up for the crisis care.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
And so I knew that the answer for us changing how we live was to be able to get crisis care and not have to wait until prevention.
Mm-hmm.
So my quest was, how do I work with black women to get us into prevention, into taking care of ourselves, loving ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
And so the question I asked was, what's the difference between black women's issues and white women's health issues? Because we were having programs and no black women were showing up to them, just
mm-hmm.
me and a few others, you know, a few sprinkling.
Right.
But then in 1983, that was the year also in 82 I met Eleanor Hinton Hoyt, who is now the CEO of the Black Women's Health Imperative. And
mm-hmm.
she and I, along with 25 other women, got together, and we organized the first national conference on black women's health issues that was held in Atlanta, third weekend in June in 1983. We thought 200 to 300 women would come, and we had close to 2,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, what
close
a story.
To 2,000. It was
wow.
just wonderful. And we kept working from that point on.
So tell us now, so as a result of that, that's when the Black Women's Health Imperative was launched. Tell us
right.
how it is set up, and I want to give a big shout-out to Lula Christopher, who was also a part of your initiative.
Right. It was called the Black Women's Health Project at that time. And the first thing we started doing is something that we are about to return to, is we started organizing self-help groups around the country. We found out that we black women didn't know ourselves and we didn't know our sisters,
mm-hmm.
and that what we needed was a safe place where we could pick our shoes off, sit down, and talk to each other about the realities of our lives,
mm-hmm.
what was hard, what was good, and what did we love about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we started. That's when we started learning about what our lives were like. A lot of us have been victims of sexual abuse, both psychological, physical. A lot of us victims of domestic violence. A lot of us were suffering with diseases like heart disease, cancer, et cetera, and we hadn't talked about it. So
mm-hmm.
in a sense, we were participating in a conspiracy of silence. And this conspiracy of silence kept us from learning about ourselves and about each other. And
right.
we broke that across the country. We had self-help groups all over the place. And we're about to return to that model because the women are saying, okay, we cried for 10 years. A lot of us took the methodology that we taught them. And Lula is one of the people who is very expert on our methodology of
mm-hmm.
how you do this coming together, creating a place, creating confidentiality. So we look at issues. You're not looking at what happened to Billy. You're looking at whatever issue she's talking about and
mm-hmm.
understanding it within the context of our communities and our
lives.
Lula,
Lula Christopher is one of your leaders who is managing and leading one of the centers, and you have several centers around the United
States.
Well,
she knows how to do it. What we had were many self-help groups around the country,
mm-hmm.
and some of them faded away. You know, you meet together for 8 or 9 years and then you fade away. Well,
mm-hmm.
now we're getting ready to bring them back. What we have now are people who are working in different regions, and Lula is a person who's working in the Boston area.
I see. I see.
Yeah,
and then tell us about Health First, the book, the Black Wellness, Black Woman's Wellness Guide, and the event that you have coming up next week on March 13th.
Okay, well, Health First is edited by Eleanor Hinton Hoyt, who was my first conference coordinator in 1983, and this has always been a dream of hers. This is actually our second book. The first one we did was in 93, Body and Soul, with Linda mm-hmm. Villarosa, but this mm-hmm. one she's done with Hillary Beard. It's really quite wonderful. It takes us all the way from adolescence through mature adulthood. And it has a lot of first-person stories. It gives voice to who we are. It's divided into three parts. First part takes us on that journey that I just mentioned. Part
right.
two gives us a glimpse at the 10 leading conditions that place us at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And then part three deals with the mind, the body, and the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends with a chapter on the imperatives of self-care, how we take care of ourselves and how we put ourselves first instead of putting everybody else in ahead of us, and how we understand by putting ourselves first, we are instructing all the people around us how to take care of themselves and to start living a wholesome life.
What I find, one of the remarkable statistics that I find, it's a great reference book, and you can, the way I look at it is because I look at it as a reference book, you don't have to start at the beginning. You can start at other points and then sort
right.
of work your way back and forth. There was
right.
one stat that you had here early in the book, Greatest Influence on Life. This is a stat from 2009, and I was just astounded. Higher power, 8%, grandparent, 8%. Now, I would assume you're talking about little girls in this particular segment. Brother, 9%, sister, 11%, friend, 15%, mother, 48%, but father,
right.
8%. Wow.
Yeah, that's because so many of them are not there for all of the reasons
yeah.
that we know. Our culture has just totally decimated the black men.
Yeah.
And we need them to rise up and put an end to this and claim it, you know?
Well, that certainly speaks volumes in terms of an imbalance between personal relationships of young men and young women. I have an older daughter who's 35, going on 36, and she's married with two children, and my life goal is to make sure she grows very old with her husband so
Absolutely.
That they can live together and duke it out and love each other and move
right.
on and see their grandchildren throughout life and
right.
not be a statistic. Yeah, that's
right. And nobody ever said it was going to be easy. We just
exactly.
have to do it. But I do want to tell you about the event. You asked me about it.
Please, yes.
I'd mm-hmm. love for people to join us on Tuesday night, March 13th at Simmons mm-hmm. College mm-hmm. at the Kotzen Center. We're going to have, there'll be a panel of five of us, Dr. Paula Johnson from Women's Hospital, Dr. Renee White. I don't know if you know her. She's a new dean, sister of the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Simmons.
Uh-huh.
Done a lot of work around HIV, reproductive rights, et cetera. Cassandra Clay, who is MSW at BU, social worker. She's going to talk about the issue of the depression and mental wellness. Eleanor Hinton Hoyt will be there, and I will be there.
Mm.
And we encourage you to come to Simmons. It's at from 6:30 to 9. We are going to start or have a little light supper at 6:30. Our program begins at 7, and it's at 300 Fenway. You can take the T, get off at, what did I say, to the museum stop. And
right.
Simmons right there. We have very limited parking for $6, but you need a Visa or a MasterCard in order to do that. But
I
we
see
hope
them.
You'll really come and join us. We're going to talk about what does it take for us to be healthy and whole.
And I think what I like about the approach of your book, and we're talking to Billy Avery, who is the founder of the Black Women's Health Imperative, going back more than 30 years, is that you're really looking at this holistically. You're not just looking at the physical health. You're looking at the spiritual health, the mental health, those people who are around us.
Right.
In the back of the book, you talk about trouble don't last always, and you've got stories that help people to see how they can get through whatever issues that they're facing. So it's a wonderful guide, and it will also be on full display and will be available. You have a book signing on Tuesday, March 13th.
Right.
I've enjoyed this interview, and just in closing, give us a website where we can go and learn more about your wonderful initiative, and maybe some words of encouragement for, let's say, those younger women who are not yet married yet. They want to be married. They want to have a family. They have different desires, and things are not necessarily coming together the way they want to, yet they want to be fully active and engaged in life. But first, your contact information.
Okay, we are at www.blackwomenshealth.org. That's blackwomenshealth.org, one word, no apostrophes or anything.
Great, thank you.
What I want to say to the young women is that I want you first to realize that you have a lot of power, that you have personal power within yourself, that you were born good, warm, zestful, loving, creative human beings. And you don't have to sacrifice yourself. You know, you keep maintain where you are. Know that you are whole as you are. And when you seek out partners, it really is all right to look at the human being for who they are within their nature. And maybe they might not have as much education as you want, but education can be attained. Maybe they might not talk the way you want, but talking could happen. What you want to do is look into the heart and the soul of a person. And I know that a lot of our young women get educated, they get desperate to find a partner, to have a life. I say slow down, breathe a bit. Start to visualize what it is you want. And if you can dream it, you can have it.
That is absolutely wonderful, wonderful advice. We've been talking to Billie Avery. She is the founder of Black Women's Health Imperative, has a program also on Blog Talk Radio, is having a wonderful event coming up next Tuesday, March 13th, in commemoration of this great book that they've launched, and just a whole host of expert speakers, including Billie Avery. Thank you so much for being a guest on my program, and hats off to you for this very important work that you and others are conducting in terms of Black women's health. Billie Avery, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. We've been listening to We've been listening to Billie Avery, and again, I encourage those who are interested, who are in the greater Boston area, do go next Tuesday, March 13th, to Simmons College and find out more about this outstanding event. The author, Eleanor Hinton Hoyt, who is the co-author of Health First and also the head, the executive director of the Black Women's Health Initiative Imperative, she'll be in 9 different cities across the United States promoting this book. I love it. It's called Health First, a Black Woman's Wellness Guide. And again, it is structured in such a nature where it is a very easy read, tons of resources, tons of addresses, and places where you can find out more information about a specific topic. So I do encourage you to get the book, come out to the event on March 13th, or go to an event like it in the various cities where Eleanor Hoyt will be going throughout the next couple of months, and pay attention to yourself. Self-talk and self-care is just so, so important. So again, we thank Billie Avery for being a guest on my program. I want to turn your attention backwards now for the remainder of our hour to who I think is one of the baddest sisters on the planet. She lived well over 100 years ago, now almost 200 years ago, since we're well into the 21st century. But when I think about the genius that it took to get her and her husband out of slavery, it's just unimaginable. I'm talking about Ellen Craft, who was born in 1826. I believe it was 1826. Yes, she was born then. She was a very fair-skinned black slave and lived in Macon, Georgia, in the Georgia area. Was then given to the daughter of her master as a gift. She was probably the product of a slave and a white her white master. But when the son, when the daughter got married, when his daughter got married, she was given to him, which oftentimes happened. They would keep slaves in the family, but it would go from one part of the family to the next. She, at 20 years old, married a fellow slave, William Craft, who looked like an average black man. He had carpentry skills and was able to go and earn money, which oftentimes happened. He would leave the plantation and go and work around and earn money and then come back. But he and Ellen were of one mind that they did not want to raise their children in slavery. And obviously, living in Georgia, they were going to have to do that. But living elsewhere, it was going to be an option for them. So they designed a scheme to get out of Georgia. And this is the amazing thing. They wanted to get as far away as possible. And they devised a way for Ellen to dress up like a man. Now, remember, she's very fair-skinned, so she probably could pass, which happened a lot in the black community, and it still happens. And her husband would be her valet. And so they managed to buy tickets. Again, her husband could raise, he had money of his own, so they saved their money. Went and bought two train tickets, and he could easily have said, it's for my master, and I'm going as his valet. So that was an easy proposition. They bought these tickets and then literally slipped on a train. I want to say airplane, but it's actually a train. She riding with the other whites as a distinguished gentleman. She's all dressed up as a man. And her husband is in the colored section, as they used to say. During that escape, this was a four-day trip that they were on a number of trains like this. During one of the destination departures and arrivals, someone they knew who was the friend of the slave master actually sat next to Ellen Craft and wanted to strike up a conversation. And she very cleverly pretended like she was deaf and couldn't hear him. In the meantime, her husband is in the colored section knowing that this person who they knew is in the same car with his wife and could just blow the entire deal. But she sat there and she pretended like she was deaf and the gentleman didn't suspect anything. And they rode all the way to Philadelphia, and the rest is history. It is an absolutely amazing story of how perseverance and a whole lot of faith and craftiness, speaking of Ellen Craft, craftiness got this couple out of slavery. They ultimately ended up in Boston. And because of the Fugitive Slave Act, which sometimes yanked free blacks, and certainly a whole lot of runaway slaves could just yank you and take you right back into slavery, that took place in 1850, at this time they were living in the Boston area, they decided, we have to get out of the country. So they ended up living in England for a number of years, and during that time they ultimately had five children. And they were speaking out against slavery. In 1860, they actually put paper to pen and wrote up about their great escape. And then ultimately, after the Civil War, returned to the United States. Turned to what I believe is Georgia and started a school for ex-slaves, which operated for many, many years. And they died peacefully in their later years. They stayed together. Ellen Craft passed away in 1891, and her husband passed away in 1900. But the essence of the story is clearly they were in love, but they were united in freedom. Just getting to the point where they would risk life and limb and move out of their area, their comfort zone, go to another part of the country and obviously another part of the world before returning. Just an amazing story, and I just think it is incredible that we don't hear more about Ellen Craft. I hope that you have a great day and have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week with a new show. Take care. This is Carol Copeland Thomas saying goodbye. Have a great day.